Relax and get loose while I put you up on game. The Figure Booth with Josh and Nate. This that podcast, folk. Those in the know, Batman vs. Iron Man. How would it go? We talking one of a kind. Collectibles, Mezco toys are respectable. It's unacceptable if it's not in the packaging. Nate don't take pics if you ain't rapping it. Nate's dirty tricks are always happening. But damn it, man, don't you be stressing. Round here we believe in plastic confessions. We trying to figure out the figures that's gonna stand the test of time. That G.I. Joe handmade hit me in the spine. There's perfection in the way that these toys are made. But I also wanna know, do I pick Wade or Slade? So this is where I come to kick it with the guys. The Figure Booth, like, comment, and subscribe.
Hello and welcome. You've made it to another episode of The Figure Booth here, where we talk about the modern day collector and the ups and downs that we go through. We go over pre-orders, we share our plastic confessions, and we do interviews with those in the toy community. My name is Josh, aka Prime to the First.
And hey guys, this is Figure Fan Nate. Good to have you back. Thank you for joining us for another episode. I think we got a pretty special one today. We're doing another interview with a member of the collecting community. I think our last interview was Mike, AZ Toy Hunters Guild. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been a good
minute. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we wanted to get somebody on. And this guy's, you know, you definitely have seen his work, you know, out on Instagram or Twitter.
Yep.
Yeah. Or maybe you just started out and you haven't discovered him. So we wanted to have him on, get to know a little bit more about him, pick his brain a bit. You know, he's very skilled guy in the community, one of the guys that always just continuously impresses me with his work and what he does and just how he's involved from, you know, A to Z as far as what he's creating out there. So it's really impressive. Anything else you want to say, Prime, before we introduce
our Easter egg? Well, say, what's our Easter egg? What's the name of our episode this week?
Oh, the name of our episode is Hit Me With Your Best Shot. So that might give you a clue of who this is. But let's delay no further and introduce our guest, the one and the only, Dwayne Shoots Toys.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for inviting me on. Excited to be here.
Man, I can't think of a better way to start 2024. It's our first guest for the first of the year.
Well, I'm honored to be here. I've watched you guys for quite a while. You guys are almost at 100 episodes now, or where are you at right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
close. Yeah. Almost at 100 as far as, we don't really count the lives, but yeah, as far as podcast episodes, about 100.
Good stuff.
Dwayne knows, he's doing his research.
Good stuff. Well, see, like, one of the things, when you start a podcast, a lot of people will get through the first couple episodes, but the hard part is like sticking it out and continually creating content over the long term. And I'm happy to see you guys doing that.
Oh man, you are 100% right. I think that's one of the hardest things with a podcast is the consistency, mm-hmm. right? And that's what everybody tells you about, whether it's YouTube or toy photography or whatever it is, try to be consistent because that brings people back to you. You know, they have a expectation of when you're going to be doing something next. And you know, life gets in the way and sometimes you got to pump the brakes and take a break. And you know, we've been trying to stick through it as much as possible. But yeah, I appreciate you recognizing that. You're right, man. That's probably one of the hardest parts about doing a podcast. Yeah. But you know, you do a lot of amazing work as well. But for anybody that might not have discovered you yet, can you give us a little bit of background? Like, who is Dwayne? What are you all about?
Well, I'm a toy photographer, and a lot of the photos that I create revolve around nostalgia, 80s, 90s, early 2000s. I really enjoy building dioramas and props. I do a lot of 3D printing and just make fun content for social media. And I love toys, action figures, miniatures, dioramas, all of that.
That's awesome. And I was doing some hunting on your Instagram and your YouTube, and I saw that you started around 2018.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you said in that is, hey, I've recently discovered toy photography. How did you discover that? Because I feel like that's unique for everyone, right? Like how they saw it for the first time.
You know what? I always say that it feels like an accident. Like I really had no intention of getting into it at all. I just personally got into photography because I love traveling and I wanted to learn how to use a camera and take nice travel photos while I was overseas. And, you know, in the process of learning how to use my camera, I began taking pictures of all kinds of objects, little things around the house. And I was watching all kinds of YouTube videos and I saw these videos of people taking photos of toy cars and eventually action figures. And I thought it was really cool. I went on to discover the community on Instagram and I just fell in love with it. And, you know, the thing is, I didn't really have any action figures when I started because all my childhood toys I had sold and gotten rid of. And I didn't have any action figures since I was like 14 or 15 around there. So I got into it when I was like 36 and I just bought a bunch of figures and started taking photos of it and got into diorama making and just snowballed. I just poured my heart into it and it's become something pretty cool.
That's awesome. I feel like when people get started into collecting, especially when you get a bit older, you know, obviously you're collecting when you're younger, but did you feel overwhelmed? Like, I don't know where to focus. I don't know what companies I like, what figures I want to get. Like, where did you start exploring, you know, what lines?
Yeah, I knew nothing at all. I was starting from scratch basically. And fortunately I had a friend who was big into Marvel Legends. He had collected a whole bunch of them over the years. And he lent me like these, a couple of big bags of figures. So I had quite a bit to work with in the beginning. And from there, I got into a little bit into SH Figure Arts. And eventually, you know, the figures I love the most are 1/6 scale figures. So I love Hot Toys. Mm-hmm. I love custom figures. I love just putting things together and kit bashing and making my own stuff. So most of the projects that I work on now are in 1/6 scale, but from time to time I will go down to like 1/12, or I've done 1/4 scale as well, just all over the place. But for the most part, it's 1/6.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And your art, like you said, it incorporates a lot of different themes: video games, music, sports, mm-hmm. pop culture, 80s and 90s stuff, which, you know, speaks to me a lot. I love, you know, a lot of your work. I'm like, yeah, I can resonate with this. A lot of turtle stuff. But you also have a lot of techniques in your tool belt, right? Like 3D printing. You talked about you like to create things. 3D printing, sculpting, painting. You do clay modeling. You know, all kinds of stuff. Stuff that I wouldn't even know where to start with. So do you have a background in doing that kind of stuff with like 3D printing or sculpting, or is that just something you kind of picked up when you started getting the toy photography?
Yeah, I started from scratch. I knew absolutely nothing when I was starting in 2018. So the thing is, I would always get these ideas, and in order for me to create them, I had to learn these crafting skills, right? Because there were certain things that I just couldn't buy, like props, right? So I had to learn how to build them. So I learned almost entirely by watching YouTube videos. In the beginning, I was working primarily with polymer clay. So I would sculpt things by hand. And it's funny to look back on those early days because the stuff I was making wasn't that great, but that's just the way it is, right? You got to start somewhere. And over time, I got a little bit better and better. And then I think the biggest game changer for me was getting a 3D printer. You know, I got one right at the beginning of the pandemic, so 2020. And that completely changed things for me. It allowed me to make really high quality props, you know, from my home here without having to go out and buy them. And you know, I learned how to paint them, and eventually got into resin printing, and then 3D scanning and all kinds of stuff. So I've just been learning things little by little. And these days you can learn pretty much anything you want just by watching videos on YouTube. Right? There's so many resources out there, so many content creators that are teaching you how to do these things. So that's how I learned, just by watching videos.
That just it kind of blows my mind, man. You didn't start doing it until 2018 because when you look, go ahead, Prime. Sorry.
No, I was gonna say it is mind blowing because I think it's like it's very inspiring to see not only like you can recognize that evolution or that progress that you've made, but you're stating I literally started from scratch. So you're a testament to be like, hey, you can just go out there and learn it and look at where you're at now. Where I really love the behind the scenes that the BTS videos that you upload where you're like, I wanted to do this, didn't know how to do it, took a scan or I made it out, and then just showing the step that you do. It's like, man, I don't know. I think most of us, we either set up too many roadblocks for ourselves or just say, oh, I don't have enough time. Mm-hmm. But then when I see your stuff, I'm like, if Dwayne can do it, I'm like, I can do it. So it's very, motivational.
That's my hope. I love hearing when people get inspired by my work, just getting inspired to start building their own dioramas or props or get into 3D mm-hmm. printing. I love helping people learn the process. And, when you're fueled by passion, you can learn a lot very quickly, right? I've put in a lot of hours, but like the time just flies by, right? You're just like, oh, this is so cool. Mm-hmm. You get absorbed in the process of learning new techniques. And I try to challenge myself a little bit with almost every project that I do. Like I'm trying to learn at mm-hmm. least one new technique, or maybe I'll shoot things from a different angle, or I'll try incorporating something that I haven't incorporated before. So I think that's one of the ways that I can, make a lot of progress just by like pushing myself a little bit with every project that I work on.
Oh yeah. And I think that's really self-evident. Like you can see every single time with a lot of your posts, there's certain common themes where you're challenging yourself, whether it's the scenario you're trying to create or the picture that really resonates with a lot of us, where, there's a lot of so many little props, and that takes a lot of time. Like I think sometimes having that passion really makes it fun. So like I, as a outsider looking at what you're doing, I'm like, man, Dwayne's in his own lane, like blinders on and just like having fun. I'm like, man, that's, I should be having fun with my figures too. And I think that's the message that I get, where I'm like, that's very inspiring to like really have fun with the figures instead of a lot of times I think us collectors, we get so focused on just trying to compare or compete with each other instead of just having fun in our sandbox. And I think you do a great job of just consistently showing that, where you take the time to really say like, hey, this is, I made all this stuff. And it, again, it like blows my socks off every time I see a post or one of your vids, and I'm like, wow, that's cool. He's having tons of fun. Like I need to start having more fun.
Thank you. You know, that's what it all comes down to, just enjoying the process. So many people get wrapped up in trying to come up with something that's going to go viral or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Me, a lot of my stuff does revolve around the 80s and 90s. So I'll just toss on some 80s or 90s music. I'll get some old TV shows or cartoons going. And then while that's happening, I'm in the zone. I'm just creating and crafting and totally just reliving my childhood. Like that's a big part of it, right? I don't know. I think when you create stuff that you really love, it the end product ends up resonating with people because they can feel that energy, that passion behind it, right? So that's that's what I try to focus on.
I love that you said that. I think that's so important for people to focus on, and it gets kind of lost sometimes because you see these you guys were talking about, you see these big accounts, you're like, oh, I want to be like that guy. Let me just try to make shots like he makes them. But you're losing that individualist aspect of this is my work, this is my unique take on it. And with your shots, Dwayne, you can see the passion coming through, not only in the process behind you creating everything, but you can see that you've got a lot of love for whatever it is that you're shooting, whether it's turtles or Biggie and looking for a video game or something, or The Price is Right. You can just see the passion coming through there. And I think that's what draws people to you, and the uniqueness of it is you're creating something that is kind of representing yourself. And I don't think people understand it's all about being unique. They don't want another cookie cutter of someone else. They want somebody that's going to bring something unique to the table. So I love that you touch on that, because I think that gets lost sometimes as far as a part of success is just being yourself.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, that's exactly it. every one of us is unique in some kind of way, whether it's the place right. that we grew up, the experiences we had, you know, our passions, whatever it is. And I think that's one of the most impactful ways that you can stand out is just by focusing on something that is unique to you instead of trying to copy other people. Because I mean, you know, right. as I scroll through my feed, I see a lot of photos that look very similar from post to post, right? And it's not that it's a bad mm-hmm. thing, but after a while, they kind of, you know, end up blurring yep. together. And, you know, the posts that really stick out are the ones that are different, right? Whether that's using a different character or having a unique action pose or unique diorama, something that I haven't really seen before. That's the stuff that I really enjoy seeing on my feed. And I really encourage people to try to, you know, spend some time identifying what's unique about you. And, you know, it might not come to you right away, but there is something. Everyone has something that is unique right. to themselves. So I really encourage you to just, you know, spend some time reflecting on that and hone in on those unique aspects of who you are.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, it doesn't come without some work. You know, like I respect the hustle. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, you started in 2018. You didn't know what you were doing and you just sat down and started learning. Yeah. And a lot of us, you know, we'll see a new task and, you know, we start to discover it and it's like, oh man, this is really intimidating and I don't know if I can continue. Mm-hmm. And it really takes yeah. that self-motivation to continue doing it and to kind of break through those barriers. And then you realize, oh, maybe this is easier than I thought, or the more that I do this, the more comfortable I feel with it. You know, and I think in order to be successful, sometimes you got to put the groundwork in and you're not just going to be, you know, a Dwayne right off the bat. You know, Dwayne started a few years ago and he put the work in. So if you're looking for instant success, you have to put the work behind it and to offer something that's a bit unique. And mm-hmm. Again, like I'm talking about trying to be individual. I see a lot of people in the toy community. The reason why I'm really focusing on this is, oh, I don't get a lot of likes or I don't have a lot of followers of this person. But like, what are you doing to try to bring people to you? You know, yeah. mm-hmm. and that's one thing I think you are really good of broadcasting yourself. You don't really try to keep things like a secret of how you did it. You know, you're mm-hmm. very open with this is how I did it. Let me walk mm-hmm. you through the process, you know, and I think that brings people to you because like this guy's awesome. He's not trying to, you know, be some kind of mm-hmm. elitist where he's
great gatekeeper,
know, hiding these skills, you yeah. know, he's trying to help the community and that's huge. Yeah. So yeah, you got to put the work in.
Yeah. I mean, like, I have no reason to hide anything from anyone. I mean, if anything, I actually gain by sharing the process because it helps solidify everything in my mind and gives me clarity as far as how to go about doing things. And also, mm-hmm. it encourages me to always try new things so that I can share those new techniques with people in the future. And just getting back to social media, one thing I really wanted to emphasize is that I know a lot of people feel pressure to post something every single day or just like just churn out content, right? And I just wanted to let people know that it's okay to like, you know, take a little, you know, step back and take a bit of a break. Like I haven't posted in over a month, right? And, you know, ideally I would like to be posting more frequently, but just for my own sanity and also to create things that are more based on what I consider quality as opposed to quantity, you know, mm-hmm. I would much rather post something that I spent a couple of weeks pouring my heart into as opposed mm-hmm. to something that I just whipped up together just for the sake of posting. You know, like when I post, it's generally with some sort of intention. You know, it's not just to keep up with everyone. Like, you know, you got to get out of the mentality that you're going to fall behind if you don't post. I don't know. I just prefer pouring my heart into a few pieces of content as opposed to just like, you know, churning out stuff just for the sake of for making it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, the quality over quantity is huge. You know, post something that you're proud of, right? And not something that you mm-hmm. just feel like, oh, I'm putting it out there because I feel like I need to post something. Mm-hmm. You know, the quality is going to speak more than the frequency of your shots. Because if yeah. the frequency is high, but the quality is low, mm-hmm. you know, you're not really challenging yourself, really. And like you were talking about, you like to do ideas that you're challenging yourself. It's easy to put out a shot, you know, easy is relative, obviously, but it's easy to put a figure behind the camera and, you know, make a shot. But are you trying to tell a story? Are you really challenging yourself? How different is this from what you've done in the past? I'm a victim of it myself, where I'll, let me just go the easy route. I just want to post something.
Yeah.
But then I look back on it and I'm like, oh man, you know, I could have done more there. And that kind of disappoints me a little bit. So I think that's awesome that you always are trying to level up. As you've kind of worked to this level where you are now, looking back, are there any shots that really stand out that just challenge you or racked your brain, or you're like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do this? You know, what was like one of the initial challenges that you had?
You know, as far as challenges, sometimes, I mean, it'll vary from project to project. Sometimes just getting figures to stand in a position that I want them to stand in without falling mm-hmm. over, or getting everything to stay in place, that's a big challenge sometimes. For me, often lighting is a challenge. I still struggle with it. You know, there's all kinds of issues that I run into. Sometimes it's just having the patience to sit through the process of creating 100 little shoe boxes or painting 100 pairs of sneakers or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
I think it's really taught me a lot of patience and just to trust the process, you know. Sometimes I don't even know exactly how a photo is going to end up until I'm like 80 or 90% through the process. I'm kind of figuring it out on the fly as I go. I'm moving things around and, you know, I'll swap things in and out. And it, every project is going to be different. And there's so many things that I struggle with, you know, from project to project. So yeah, that's an example right there of just, it's not hard. It's not, you know, complicated. It's just, you got to have patience, right? I had to spend a lot of time just cutting up all those shoe boxes and putting it all together.
As you're talking, you know, this shot immediately came to mind as far as the intricacy of the detail. And for any of our audio listeners, you know, this is one of those episodes I would recommend that you watch on the video platform if you can. But for our audio listeners, I'm showing a shot of that Dwayne did of Miles mm-hmm. in the Nike store, surrounded by boxes and boxes of Nikes. You got individual sneakers there.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks like he's in a real Nike store. So the fact that you created all this is just really, really impressive. You know, focusing on those shoe boxes, how do you do that?
It's actually pretty easy. The first thing I did was I went online and just looked for a generic shoebox template, right? And mm-hmm. you can, if you just type in shoebox template on Google, you'll find a whole bunch of different designs.
Yeah.
And these are blank, right? So they're just white with different lines to show you where to cut it. And then from there, I just took photos of actual shoeboxes and then imported them into the template and kind of created my own custom template based on that. In some cases, I didn't actually have the physical shoeboxes in front of me. So one of my little tricks is that I love going on eBay and then just looking for photos of shoeboxes, right? And sometimes you'll find them with photos of the boxes from different angles. You can kind of edit them, skew them a little bit, and warp them to fit your template. And then you can kind of create almost anything you want that way. So it was actually pretty easy to do.
It's the more like making each of them is the more tedious kind of part, right?
Yeah.
That, so like once like I had,
So
I made about, for this photo, I've got one, two, three, three different types of boxes there, right? I just printed off like, you know, a few dozen of each and then just sat there cutting, folding, gluing, and putting it together. And, you know, like aside from that, I also had to build the shelves and build all the little price tags and all that kind of stuff. So, it's not hard. It's just tedious.
There was no details. Yeah.
Yeah. Quote unquote.
You know, and that's hard, the tedious part where it's like you see the shot and you're like, oh, man. So, but then building the shelves, building the boxes, like all that, it always reminds me of like that picture where, you know, people that see the successful shot or the shot that goes viral. It's just the tip of the iceberg, but you don't see all the work that went into it. That's, you know, that a lot of us don't see. So this shot, and then there's another shot you did where it was just like a wall of shoes. Like that, man, that took me back. I was like, man, when's the last time I was like in a Foot Locker or something just buying sneakers? Like I don't remember. A lot of times now, you know, we just buy them online, or I already know my size. I don't need to, I don't know. It's just, it's crazy. A lot of these shots, I'm like, oh, I remember doing that. Like, it's crazy.
See,
I love it.
This one was even more time consuming because each of those pairs of shoes is 3D printed and I painted them, right? So this one I kind of did over the course of several weeks. I would just, you know, every day I'd paint a couple of them and then do something else, right? I tried to make as many, like each one is somewhat unique, you know, it's not the same pattern over and over again. There's like a slight difference between every pair. And that was very time consuming.
That is insane. Yeah,
I'm sure you know, you reach a point where you're like, go ahead, Nate.
I was going to say the fact that you, you know, individually painted all of those and 3D printed them and, you know, the time that it probably took. That's what I think when I think of this, like, man, the time that it took him to create this. But the payoff is worth it, you know, because it really just brings the shot together. And, you know, you didn't leave any spot really uncovered. You know, you could have easily like just, oh, let me just make a few and I'll spread these out and, you know, try to separate it. But you made this as condensed as possible. So you made it almost more challenging for yourself to do that. I just respect that hustle. It's so cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's fun. And the thing is, like, I think that's one of the things, getting back to being unique, this is one of the things that I think kind of separates me from other types of, you know, photography. Just, you see, I try to build stuff that you don't really see very often. And I'm not the best photographer. I'm not the best diorama builder, but I can kind of combine things in a way that is unique to me. And it stands out, and it's fun to make. And, you know, it seems to resonate with a lot of people.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, with the masses. Yeah. And I think, you know, like Nate was saying, keeping in mind the payoff, I think a lot of, well, certain individuals, we can't see that far enough. Like, you know, I couldn't see myself painting all these little shoes because I could see, like, at a given point, I'm like, man, am I just doing too much? Because maybe the end game is like, oh, I just want an epic shot. But, you know, as I'm hearing you explain it, you're like, I was just having fun just painting each shoe. I mean, the fact that it's so intricate, I think, is there a time where you're like, am I doing too much? Or is this really going to work out? You know, how you mentioned you didn't have the final shot in your head. If you're doing all this, you're like, is this really going to pay off? Like, do those type of thoughts go through your mind?
Yeah, from time to time, like, you know, I'll be 30% of the way done and I'm just asking myself, like, is this really going to be worth the time? But then I just tell myself to trust the process and just stick it out. Okay. And, you know, sometimes it may not work out the way that I had hoped, but most of the time it ends up turning out all right. So I just trust the process.
Yeah.
And like you were talking about earlier, you know, you collect 1/6. This is the Hot Toys, I'm assuming, right? Spider-Man here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you also make your own custom figures, which I think that's what this Biggie is, unless I'm wrong. But did you create this Biggie yourself?
Yeah. So this one, I bought the head sculpt online. And then I just found like a body and then paint. It was just, like, I guess, I don't know what they call it, but just like a fatter body. And then just painted it to match the head sculpt. And I got the jersey custom made. And then just put all the pieces together. So
awesome.
These days, most of the figures I use are customized in some way. So it might not be completely custom, but at the very least, I'll add, you know, a unique pair of shoes or, you know, some kind of accessory that's unique. I don't know. That's one of the reasons I love 1/6 is because it's a lot easier to customize the figures, like as far as swapping clothes and changing bodies and accessories and all that. It's a lot easier because you know, sometimes when you're dealing with Marvel Legends, for example, like the clothing is like sculpted into the figure, right? You can't really remove it easily. So I just prefer 1/6.
Right. And then as far as the clothing, do you make that too? Or is that something you just, you buy online?
Sometimes I make it. I don't know how to sew. So usually okay. I'll just like cut things and then glue them together. There was one shot I did a while back. It was with the Golden Girls working out in the gym. Mm-hmm. And I just made like these 80s aerobic outfits. That was all custom, but it was kind of just glued together. I don't know where
find it here.
This is my website. It's on my Instagram, but
oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, sometimes I'll just cut fabric pieces and then glue them together. And as long as it looks good enough for the photo, then I'm happy. It doesn't have to necessarily be like, you know,
yeah.
greatest in person.
And I'm trying to find what's cool is like the shots
great work here.
Sorry, how you know we were talking about earlier, a lot of the shots start to kind of blend in together because you know you see the same dial over and over, the brickwork, it's the alley, it's the rooftop, but then your shots, it's like, you know, Biggie shopping for video games, and it takes me like straight to my childhood where I was like, oh damn, like now I'm just sitting at it staring at it for longer than like a Spidey in the alley, because I'll just like double tap and I'll keep swiping. So I think that again, as a collector, and especially when we're stepping into it, when you see those shots, you're like, oh, that's what I want to do. But then sometimes we I think shoot for like the fence is too high, where, you know, I think starting from the ground up and just seeing like, okay, that those are the type of shots I like. Or back to your point, like, you know, just finding my own, what really speaks to me, what is it that I like to take shots of, or what is it that I grew up with. And that's a lot of times that one post that you don't give two thoughts about, but you put so much passion into it, like it'll resonate with a lot of individuals.
Yeah. And like, you don't have to make it super complicated either. Like there are some toy photographers like Mr. Lee, for example, he can take a photo of just a figure by itself, mm-hmm. but the way he lights it makes it look captivating. Yep. Right. So you just got to find your own lane find what speaks to you and develop your own style. It doesn't have to be super complicated.
Right.
Yeah, that's so true. Everybody kind of does their own thing. And whereas one person might be super detailed, this other person might not be, but their work is still amazing. And it's all about, you know, kind of what you're focusing on. Like he's trying to broadcast the figure and really show off the details, whereas you're trying to do more of world building, you know, like building this world for these characters to live in and have it, like this environment that you're building for them. And speaking of the nostalgia side of it, you know, you can tell you're from the 80s, 90s. You have a lot of love for that because it really just speaks in your shots. One shot that was like my childhood in a nutshell was TMNT and McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah. That was one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much great detail here. And I have vivid memories of going to McDonald's with my brother and, you know, playing with the Happy Meals toys and just having fun eating together, you know. It's just like, so this just hits so many levels for me as far as how I grew up as a kid. But this one is also one of your most impressive, and at least in my opinion, as far as how many different types of media are in here. You know, you're doing like clay modeling, mm-hmm. 3D printing, you know, I don't know everything, but you probably did some print offs for the pictures in the background. There's just so much going on here. So mm-hmm. with the food, you know, you modeled that food, right? Like you did it from clay.
Yeah. Yeah. The burgers and the fries, those were modeled from clay. So the toys, I actually 3D scanned the original McDonald's Happy Meal toys and then, you know, made miniature versions of them. And 3D printed a lot of different things, like the that high chair in the back. The burger chairs are all 3D printed. The tables are made out of foam board and paper. The pizza boxes, the cookie boxes, those are all cut out of paper and folded together. So, and the pictures in the background, those are all printed as well. So there's lots of different types of media, as you said, going on here. This was really fun. I made a full-length YouTube video describing the whole process of this one because I knew a lot of people would resonate with this concept. So,
I knew getting my Play-Doh making burger, it wasn't going to do the same the same result. That Play-Doh doesn't come out exactly.
Yeah. Don't doubt yourself, Prime. Try the Play-Doh.
I had to give it back to my daughter. I'm like, okay, here, take your hamburger Play-Doh set. It didn't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Mario figure that Mikey had, I'm pretty sure that I had that too, at least some of the Mario toys.
Yeah, yeah. If you were a kid at that time, there's a good chance that you had that toy or one of those toys.
Yeah.
And one thing that I really like about this photo is, like, if you look at the back, there's that display, the toy display.
Yeah.
That, like, so I went online and found, like, pictures of the actual display that they had in the stores. And I tried to replicate that in miniature form just because I knew, like, that would, like, for me, that brings back memories, right? Just walking into McDonald's and seeing the toys on display. And I knew other people would have that same feeling when they saw that. So that was special. That's one of the few pieces that I still have from that diorama. A lot of the other ones I've either given away or recycled into other things. So one of the most enjoyable parts of that project.
Yeah, you touch on something. So you don't keep all the stuff that you make. Sometimes you said you'll recycle it or you'll give it away. That's pretty awesome of you to do. Like, just family or, you know, other people that you know.
Well, in this case, one of my followers who actually lives in Edmonton with me, he's been following me for a long time. I had never met him in person until a couple months ago. And he's a big collector of Happy Meal toys and all that. And he said, you know, is there any chance I could buy these off you? And I said, don't worry, I'll just give them to you when I'm done the project. So I met up with him and gave him a bunch of the Happy Meal boxes and the toys and all that stuff. So that was kind of cool. And like you said, like, I make disposable dioramas or temporary dioramas. So I basically build everything for the scene, take a photo, and then take it all apart. So none of these dioramas exist in their original form now. Like, sometimes I may have, like, bits and pieces of certain things, especially the little props. I keep them stored in little plastic containers all over my apartment. But for the most part, like, the walls and the floors and all that, those are kind of dismantled and, I'll recycle them. Like, a lot of that is made out of foam board and paper, so it's easy to kind of scrap or recycle. So yeah, it's kind of a Zen way of thinking. You build something and then it's gone, right? It's impermanent.
Is that kind of the level? Yeah, is it gut-wrenching for you to kind of do that sometimes? Because sometimes when I get something that I really like, or I like this scene, it's hard for me to break it down because I'm like, man, I hope I can get something to this level again. So is it hard for you, like, internally to do that sometimes?
Sometimes it is, yeah. But I kind of have to do it out of necessity because I live in a one-bedroom apartment. I don't have any room. I mean, ideally, if I had space, I would have a little museum with all these little dioramas. But unfortunately, I don't have the space at this time. So it does hurt sometimes, but it also just kind of lightens the load, right? You just kind of, you build it and then take the photo, you capture that moment, and then it's gone, right? It's just kind of like life. Nothing is permanent.
Yeah, that is the truth. And you mentioned, your YouTube, which we have up here. For anybody that's listening, if you want to get a little bit more detailed on how Dwayne does a lot of this, he tells you on his YouTube channel. He's got tons of great videos where he's going into detail about how he made this specific scene. The one we were just looking at, the McDonald's with the Happy Meals, it's a great video. Goes into a lot of detail about how he did every specific piece, 3D modeling the toys and printing them and painting. It's just all here. There's a lot of great content on Dwayne's YouTube page. So if you guys haven't checked it out, you should really go check him out. You can get lost in here for hours just looking at all the different videos and how he does stuff. So YouTube, you've been on, what, I think since 2018 is what I saw, right?
Yeah, pretty much since the beginning. But initially, I was not really putting much focus on YouTube. I was focusing primarily on Instagram and then TikTok. But YouTube was kind of in the back burner. But now I think I want to focus more on YouTube and a little bit less on the other platforms, just because I love making videos. It's something that's a lot of fun for me. And I think as far as long-term potential, YouTube is probably going to be the best platform for me to be on. Mm-hmm. And I have all kinds of ideas. The only issue is that it takes forever to make a YouTube video, right? Especially if you want to, you know, have lots of different shots and all that. As I'm building the stuff, like lots of planning, it takes a while, but it's rewarding. And you know, one of the positive things is that you can make money doing that, and you know, it does help you know, to pay the bills. So I that's my favorite platform, I think. I'm going to focus a lot more time on it this year.
Nice.
Yeah. So definitely go check out Dwayne. It sounds like we're going to be getting more content on his YouTube channel, which is amazing. And, you know, you have a really good presence in front of the camera too, right? You're very natural when you're talking on your videos. Mm-hmm. Very, you know, it seems like you're friendly, you know, that seems weird to say for a YouTube video.
But he may or may not be friendly.
I guess the best way to say it, very approachable. Like if I saw you on the street, I wouldn't be afraid to talk to you because you seem just like a nice guy. And that's how you treat your videos too, is like you're not speaking at this expert level. You're really just trying to break it down as basic as possible. This is how this is made. And I think that's what attracts people to you. And like you were talking about before, how you learned, this is a great way of giving back and teaching others, or, you know, kind of, hey, this is how I learned. Hopefully this helps you too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know what? I don't consider myself an expert at all. Like, I'm still learning. I have a lot to learn. And the fun thing about YouTube is that it's almost like a way of documenting my progress, because if I go back and look at my earlier videos, I kind of laugh. I'm like, oh, wow, like I made this prop in this way. Now I do it in a completely different way. I can make it much better. Right. So you can kind of see the progression. It's fun to share the process. I think one thing I love hearing is when people watch a video and they're like, oh, wow, that inspired me to make this on my own. And then they'll send me a picture of something they've made based upon an idea that I had in my video. I love seeing that. That's a lot of fun. Awesome. And, you know, it's just a way of, I guess, kind of giving back, because that's how I learned. Right. So I'm just allowing other people to learn in the same way that I learned. And it's specific to toy photography and diorama building.
Do you feel like you get a lot of positive feedback on your YouTube, like a lot of good comments, you know, anything that people have like specially requested that you made or that kind of stuff? Or how's the YouTube experience in general?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's interesting right now because, you know, we have long form video and then we have shorts, right? And they're almost like two different audiences. You know, the bulk of my followers and subscribers have come from my YouTube shorts, right? Because I've had some that have really, you know, exploded. And those followers don't necessarily translate into viewers on your long form, right? So it's kind of, you know, finding a good balance between creating long form and short form content. And I think at this point, I'm pretty comfortable with the short form, but I need to, I think, put more time into developing a more unique style in the long form video. And I want to create more of a storytelling style and have something that's entertaining and educational at the same time. And I'm still developing that. It takes a while, but it's rewarding, I find. Like, you know, when you put together a 10-minute video that really resonates with people, it really creates a stronger connection than you would create with a short form video. So that's what I'm going to be putting my energy into this year.
Yeah, and like you were talking about, you know, making videos takes time. So a 10-minute video takes even more time. So it's kind of like sort of a way, I'm sure, gratifying to say, okay, I put all this time and effort to it. It's being well received. It makes you more willing to do stuff that's longer in the future as well. Like, as you've kind of progressed into that, you know, and I see you have like a mix of short and longer stuff. But like, do you have like something in your mind? You're like, okay, this is kind of a long form video I would like to do at some point in the future. You know, as you're talking about it, like what's one of your goals there?
Yeah, no, I've got a list of a few dozen video ideas, right? It's just a matter of executing and getting them done, right? That's the one thing. So I'm basically doing this full time. And the hard part is juggling, you know, focusing on projects that you do for fun, that you love, and then focusing on things that make you money, right? So every once in a while, I got to kind of pull back and then work on a brand deal or something. Like for the last few weeks, I was working on a brand deal project, and that prevented me from, you know, focusing on time on projects that I love, right? That I want to create artistically for YouTube. So it's finding that balance. But as far as video ideas, I've got a whole bunch. I think one of the things is that I've recently got into is I've discovered some old VHS tapes and home video tapes, right, of me when I was a kid. So I want to try to incorporate that into the storytelling aspect of my video and just kind of show the inspiration behind how my photo was created based upon that footage, right? So a while back I did a photo of Mike Tyson playing Punch Out with the power glove, right? That was me at like, you know, 9 years old. That was you know, yeah, exactly that photo right there. That encapsulates my life that time. And I kind of want to revisit this concept with different characters in a different diorama, but I want to incorporate footage from, you know, from the actual video game and from my past and kind of tell a story of how this impacted my life. Because this game took over my life for a very long time. I was so frustrated. I could never beat Mike Tyson. I would die within the first or get knocked out within the first 10 seconds. And then after seeing that power glove commercial on TV, I was convinced that the power glove would be the secret weapon that I needed to beat Mike Tyson. And I did, and I was lucky enough to get a power glove, but then when I tried it, it was actually harder to.
Oh no.
Oh, we lost them.
Let me pause. Yeah, let me pause real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, Dwayne, you were telling us about Punch-Out.
Yeah. So I basically want to tell the story of my childhood and my connection to the video game through old footage, video game footage, old video clips, and by creating a diorama. So that's, you know, one of the ideas that I have. I've got a lot of ideas that are similar. I just want to get more into the storytelling aspect and kind of create more of an entertaining experience and build a connection with the audience. I'm just going to be experimenting with different styles of video editing and cinematography and all that. So it's something I'm looking forward to.
I think that's a great idea. And like, you know, I think the storytelling aspect is really what makes a lot of either toy photography shots or YouTube videos a bit better, in my opinion, because it's not just, hey, I'm doing this because I think this is a popular thing. I'm doing this because it has some kind of personal connection to me. And I'm trying to tell this story of my experience as a child of how I used to play Mike Tyson, you know, Punch Out. I think that's awesome. So I'm excited to see your new work. And you mentioned that you do, you know, have shots where you'll get sponsored from time to time, or I don't know if it sponsors the right word, or you work with a specific brand. But one of the more recent ones that I've seen is this shot with Hot Wheels and Gucci. So were you working with both of these brands on this shot?
I was contacted by Gucci. I guess they had a special division for collectibles, and this was they were based in Milan, in Italy. And they reached out to me after seeing my work online, and they said they wanted like a fun, playful, bright way to capture this new collectible crossover that they had coming up with Hot Wheels. So that was a cool experience. It was really neat because they sent me the car well in advance. So I got to, you know, play around with it, and they let me keep the car. I have like a prototype version. And nice. I had never shot any kind of Hot Wheels before, so this was a first. And they told me to just kind of do my thing. And, you know, I 3D printed some custom tracks and put the Gucci stripes in there and the Gucci floor and the logo and all that, and came up with something pretty fun.
Yeah, very clever placement of things that are related to the brand, you know, that aren't just right in your face. It's not like you're like, okay, this is Gucci, and you've got like this huge label right on the front of the, you know, it's subtle. It's more in the background. Like you said, the what you use for the track, very subtle Gucci kind of references going on the floor. So I think you did an amazing job on this, but I can imagine the stress level working on stuff for brands. So like, is this an idea that came to you pretty quickly, or were you under a time crunch? You know, was Gucci... You said they were pretty cool about letting you do your thing, but how much time did you were you allowed, I guess, for this type of shot?
Well, you know what? Every brand deal that I work on is different. Some of them have, you know, very tight deadlines, and those are very stressful situations. This one wasn't that bad. They actually contacted me well in advance and had quite a bit of time to think about the idea. So I went through a few different iterations, so it didn't develop right away, but just, you know, going back and forth with them, we came up with this concept. One of the downsides of working with brands is often they have, like usually the bigger brands will have very strict requirements for the content. They'll say, you cannot do this, you have to do this. If you're making a video, they'll say you have to put this in the video right at the beginning, or include this logo here, or use this specific type of music. There's really a lot of restrictions in many cases. So it can be frustrating as, you know, an artist, as someone who's trying to express themselves creatively when you're limited like that. But that comes with the territory, right? It's just part of the process of working with brands. But sometimes they'll give you free rein. They'll say, do whatever you want. You can, you know, have complete creative control as long as you, you know, show this project in some kind of way, then you're fine. So I love those kind of projects. And it's been a lot of fun. And like one of the, I guess, benefits of creating content in the way that I do, like I build all my own dioramas. So technically I can work with almost any kind of company just by building a miniature version of the product or building a diorama based on their concept. So it really does open a lot of doors when you learn those skills. So I really encourage people to try to get into some kind of, whether it's diorama making or painting or prop building, that kind of stuff. It can really open a lot of doors for you.
Yeah, that's huge. That's something I was going to touch on as well. It's just the flexibility it provides you, right? It's like, I don't have to go look for this in store. I can just make it myself. And I'm sure that saves you a bit of money as well, because those props can get expensive quickly.
Yeah.
So the fact that you can make it yourself is pretty awesome. But I think you did a great job in the shot. I'm sure Gucci was happy with it. And, you know, are there other brands that you've worked with in the past?
There's a whole bunch. I've done stuff on Instagram. I don't know if it's on my main feed. It might be. I did one with a wine company called 19 Crimes. They've done wines with like Snoop, and the one that I worked on was one with Martha Stewart. They sent me an action figure to work with, and then they wanted me to create a little diorama for that. That was fun. Done stuff with like Netflix for Stranger Things, ESPN. I did one to promote one of their games between the Warriors and the Lakers.
Wow.
A lot of random companies, like all across the board. I'm working on one right now. I can't say the brand, but I'll probably be releasing it, I think, Monday or Tuesday next week.
Nice.
So that's a pretty big brand, a brand that most people will know, but it's not related to toys at all. So it's kind of
awesome.
Yeah. And it's all over the board, all across the board.
Well, congrats to you, man. I mean, I'm happy for you, and the hard work is obviously paying off because people are noticing, and you know, it speaks for itself. So I'm excited to see, you know, the future of your success. You're one of those accounts that I always just, what is he going to do next? You know, what is he going to do next? We appreciate all the hard work you're doing behind the scenes, Dwayne. If you guys want to see more of Dwayne's work, you can go to either DwayneShootsToys.com. He's got some of his shots on there. He's got socials pretty much everywhere, at Dwayne Shoots Toys on social media. I think he's on TikTok, X, which formerly Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Mm-hmm. You're pretty much everywhere, Dwayne, under the same name, right? At Dwayne Shoots Toys.
Yeah, okay. Correct.
Awesome. So yeah, there's a lot of other content. You know, we can only cover a few shots, obviously, on this show, but there's just so many great shots that you've done, Dwayne. So yeah, you guys that are listening, if you haven't for some reason seen his work, please go check him out. You will not be disappointed. Before we move on to our next segment, I just want to plug one thing. I noticed that you were on one of my favorite shows from last year. You were an extra on The Last of Us, right?
I was an extra, but I didn't make it into the show. I was cut. But I did spend I spent 6 days on the set. So they were filming in my home province of Alberta, Canada, and they were going to different cities. And one of my friends sent me a link to an article where they were announcing a casting call. They were looking for people with a weathered look. And at the time I started by growing my hair out, and I had the beard and everything, and then I just sent in a picture, and they picked me to be one of the fireflies from the show.
So that's awesome.
I made a video describing the whole process on YouTube. You can check that out if you're interested. But it was really cool. Like I saw Pedro Pascal from maybe 10, 15 feet away. The scene that we filmed was right at the very end when he's captured in the hospital, right before he goes on that crazy rampage. That's my cool. On the right there. That's my outfit. It was fun. I had never. Like, I don't have any aspirations to become an actor or anything, but I've always wanted to be a background extra just to see the process. And, we'd go in there, they'd have a call time early in the morning. Sometimes we'd get there at like 5 a.m. We'd have to go through makeup. They put like grease on my face and style my hair and all that, and wardrobe. And then we'd have to spend a lot of time sitting in the holding area, just waiting. It was a really cool experience just to be in that environment.
For sure. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. On such a big show too, right? Like I can imagine that show was extremely successful for Warner Brothers because the following behind it. Did you play The Last of Us games?
Yeah, I played them both. Great, great games. I'm looking forward to the next season. I'm curious to see what they do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said that's something you're going to try to do, or at some point maybe try to do more, like where you're an extra in a movie or a show?
I would like to. I mean, I know for season two, they're not filming in my area, so I won't have a chance at that, but I'd be open to it. It was fun. It was fun. Kind of, there's not really much pressure. You don't have to say any lines or anything, right? You just kind of stand in the background and act busy. Like in the scene we were filming, like they just told us to like kind of walk around and then pretend we're talking. We're not allowed to actually talk because don't want to make noise, but it was fun. It was really cool. And going through the wardrobe and all that, by the way, the food was amazing on set. They gave us
really
several meals. They had all kinds of stuff. Everything, every diet was accommodated. They had vegan stuff. They had like meat. Everything. Like, it was really good. Really good food. Wow. And I met some great people. We spent a lot of time just sitting there in the holding area, so we got a chance to talk and played tons of card games and all that. But unfortunately, they didn't allow us to bring cameras onto the set, so we couldn't take pictures of the set. But it was still, you know, those are memories locked in my mind. It was
really cool.
Yeah,
something you'll never forget. And it's just yet another thing to add to your tool belt, as if you weren't already skilled enough. Now you can add that you've done a little bit of acting as well. So
if you can call it acting.
That's awesome. That's really cool, man. Well, before we move in, you're one of those guys I feel like I just talked to forever. So we appreciate letting us pick your brain, but we're not done with you just yet, Dwayne. We're going to move into our next segment, which is the Dirty Dozen, doing a rapid fire round of different toy companies. You tell us what comes to your mind.
I'm nervous. We'll
don't be nervous.
It's like the Price is Right.
Yeah,
which was another one of those shots that you did in the past. Is that that's not really coming up, is it? Let's try something else here. Let me try this. How about that? There we go.
There we go.
Okay, that's good.
All right. First category is Marvel Legends.
Okay, and you just want the first thing that comes to mind, or?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. What comes to mind?
You hate it. You love it.
This is where I got my start. So, you know, I have fond memories. They do. I mean, a lot of, I guess, in general, toys are getting more and more expensive, right? So it's not quite the same as it was. One thing that I think is kind of unfortunate is that you're seeing a lot of these toys, you know, they're priced high, and then some of them are sitting on the shelves, right? So they end up at, you know, discount stores, you know, a few months later, and you get them for $4 or $5, right? I really don't know what the future is going to hold for a lot of these mid-range lines, I guess, you know, like I don't know, but I do like their figures. Mm-hmm. You know, I still have a few of them. I don't shoot too much in 1/12, but I still enjoy the figures.
Yeah, and I'm sure even in Canada, they're even more expensive, right? You gotta pay a little extra for it being imported.
Yeah, they're pretty expensive. My brother lives in Florida, so he keeps on telling me about Ollie's and all these different discount stores where they just, you know, they can find them for like less than $10, right? Or Ross or all those stores, right? I get jealous when I hear his stories, but yeah, like up here, they're expensive. They're expensive. They're like, you know, some of them like $35-$40 Canadian. So
wow,
it's crazy.
Yeah, to your point, like try to just save the money and, you know, get a 1/6 figure that I've been wanting rather than spending the $30-$40 on this Marvel Legends.
Yeah, I put more of my money into like Hot Toys and that kind of stuff. They're expensive, but they hold their value quite well. And, amazing quality.
Not gonna find any Hot Toys at Ross.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, and I will say to preface this a bit, this might be a bit more 1/12 bias because that's what me and Prime collect. So if you don't have experience collecting, that's totally cool.
Yeah, I'm
kind of a heads up.
Yeah, no worries.
Sparrow Toys, so Animal Warriors of the Kingdom.
I don't think I've ever heard of these toys.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like gorillas, apes, monkeys, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll move on to the next one because I don't even have personal experience with these myself, but they seem to get a lot of great feedback. People love these figures, so this is one I know you're familiar with, NECA.
Yeah, no, I love NECA. The quarter scale turtles are my favorite figures probably of all time. I love shooting with them, even though it is a bit challenging since they're so big. But they look like they stepped right out of the movie into your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the whole Turtles line. I love it. You know, the articulation isn't necessarily as extensive as other brands, but like the aesthetics, the way they look, they have some great licenses. They've got like Gremlins and all the, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and all those crazy licenses that I love. So I'm a big, big NECA fan.
Nice. Yeah, you do some amazing work with those turtles. So many great shots with the turtles. I can't even name them off my head, but yeah. Four Horsemen Studios, you dabbled in any of this? Any interest in Mythic
Legions?
Are
they the ones that make the Mythic Legions? Or?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Their figures look beautiful. I haven't purchased any myself, but I see like Trevor, 1/6 shooter, like some of the stuff he does is absolutely phenomenal. And those characters look really cool. And they're all like unique characters, right? I don't own any myself, but I appreciate them for sure.
Do you, I would imagine you tend to lead more towards, you know, the nostalgia stuff, turtles, all that, but do you have anything that's like fantasy based that you collect or that you like?
Not so much. No, it's more like the mainstream nostalgia based stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the main thing about Four Horsemen that, because I'm not really a fantasy collector either, but it's kind of like scratching that itch for me a little bit. Like, okay, this is something I don't normally collect. But if they ever do 1/6, maybe we'll see Dwayne do some of those.
Yeah, their figures look beautiful.
SH Figure Arts.
Some of my earlier figures were from SH Figure Arts. I had the Bruce Lee and some of the Marvel figures. In that Price is Right shot I did, I used the Iron Man and Thanos.
I saw that.
They're good. Like some of them, like especially that Iron Man that I shot, it's a solid figure. It's got some weight to it, highly detailed, highly poseable, a little bit more expensive, but you're getting like good quality figures. And the thing is with some of those slightly more affordable brands, the prices are going up and getting to the point where like it's almost worth it just to spend the extra money and get an SH Figure Arts figure, right? Like it's you're getting you know, really high quality product there. So I'm a fan.
Yeah, it's a good point. You could spend $40 on a Legends or $65 on a SH Figure Arts and get a much better quality figure, in my opinion, as well. Yeah, and that Price is Right shot is one of my favorites. I didn't showcase it when we were talking to you, but just amazing display on that. Yeah, that was another one spoke to my childhood. G.I. Joe, Classified, do you have anything 1/6 or
You know what? When I was a kid, I used to really like G.I. Joe. I had quite a few. I don't currently have any of the Classified figures. I like them. I mean, they have great, you know, a great look to them. Their articulation is good, but I actually kind of prefer the aesthetics of the Super 7 line. I know the articulation is nowhere near as good as Classified, but like that cartoon aesthetic, like I have the Cobra Commander, and that's just pure nostalgia for me. Right. So, I just prefer the aesthetic of the Super 7, but I, you know, they've gone pretty deep on this Classified line. Like I go to, we have a Toys R Us pretty close by and I go there like at least once a week just to see what they have. And they have like always all tons of Classified figures, like Bazooka and all these characters that I remember. So I like the fact that they've gone really deep into the characters. So it's a cool line. And Sergeant Slaughter, there's a whole bunch of cool figures there.
I'm just jealous of the fact that you can still go to a Toys R Us.
We've got like three locations in my city alone. So it's we're pretty lucky. But I heard you guys are getting some stores popping up there now, right?
Yeah, there's so they're in like malls and they're a part of Macy's. At least the ones that I've seen. So it's very sparse. And usually the toys are more for younger kids, like at least from what I've seen. So it's not by any means the same experience. It's cool that, hey, it's still Toys R Us, but no, and not like when I was a kid.
Yeah. But you know, you guys have like Target and a lot of times they'll have stuff at Target that I can't get here. Or like sometimes at Toys R Us, we do get Target exclusives going there, but it's like 2 or 3 months delayed. Right. So it's not, as far as like accessibility, I think it's much better in the US. You know, it's fun to have Toys R Us here. I could go there quite a bit just to walk around and be a kid.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point. The number of stores in the U.S. definitely is, as far as variety, we have a lot of variety, so I can't complain too much, I guess.
Yeah.
How about Mafex? You ever experienced Mafex?
I don't think I've had any Mafex figures. I've seen, you know, some pretty cool figures they've made. I think they made some basketball ones that I thought were pretty cool, like the Jordan and LeBron and all that, and some of the Marvel. I've seen the Spider-Man, but to me, I think they're, I don't have any experience with them, but I'm assuming they're somewhat similar to the SH Figure Arts kind of quality, or I kind of put them in that category.
Definitely. Are you a, speaking of basketball, sorry, I'm diverting. Are you a Toronto Raptors fan?
I guess, yeah, by default. I don't watch too much basketball, but like when it comes time for playoffs, that's when I watch. My sport is hockey. I love watching hockey. That's my favorite thing to watch. But
nice.
But by default, I'm a Raptors fan. Casual.
Well, they're doing pretty great this season. They have a strong team. So I've been watching them a lot. Mezco.
As far as
like cloth goods figures, you have any temptation here?
Yeah, like if I were to get more into the 1/12th scale, I would definitely look at these. I don't currently own any Mezco. In the past, I've only owned some of the bigger Mezco figures, like the Biggie, and there were like a few other ones that they made that I have, but I haven't ever purchased any of the 1/12th. But there are people like Jason B. Michael, who does like a great job with the Mezco figures. Yep. I love watching his stuff. And Paige, the toy Paige. He does some Mezco fanatic. So it's cool to see what they post. I do like, from the photos anyway, I liked the Power Rangers stuff that they put together. I don't know about the actual figures, but the photos looked pretty cool.
Yeah, they're giving us the whole team eventually. Far, Green Ranger, White Ranger. Was Mighty Morphin kind of like your go-to as far as Power Rangers? Did you like the other Power Rangers?
I didn't watch any of the other ones. I watched a little bit of Beast Morphers, but the newer one. But for me, it's mainly Mighty Morphin.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Amazing Yamaguchi?
I'm not
familiar. I think they do some 1/6 stuff.
They make a Spider-Man, I think, or
also called Rebel Tech.
Okay, yeah, I've seen the Spider-Man then, Rebel Tech. Don't really have much experience with this at all, aside from just seeing photos of it. Again, I'm assuming it's somewhat similar to the SH Figure Arts Mafex kind of tier,
I would say, if you don't like posing figures, don't buy one of these figures because they're very complicated, I guess, in the posing. They can hit poses unlike any other figure in my collection, but it's a bit more complicated.
It's like a Rubik's Cube.
Oh, wow. Yes. You have to like almost transform them or like twist them in certain ways to... Okay.
Yeah, just way more joints than the normal figure, you know. You can just move every aspect of their body, and that can make it very complicated because it's like, okay, well, how did this originally go? Because now I just want him to stand up straight and I can't even do that. I got a few more for you. Third party figures.
Yeah, I'm all about them. Actually, for that the Last of Us photo that I did, I got the clothing from a third party figure of Joel's character, and then I used the head from a Hot Toys Mandalorian that I customized, but third-party figures are cool. I love picking them up. Because sometimes, you know, you'll want a certain license that just no big company has, right? And then you'll get a third-party company to make it, and then you can find it there. So, yeah, they fill that need.
Yeah, I think it's nice that nowadays we're seeing more, kind of both, at least from what I've seen, more 1/12, more 1/6. So I think there's more interest in it. I don't know if some of the bodies that you get, that would be third party, but that might be a good resource as well as far as parts, maybe, is third party figures.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, bodies and then just items of clothing and head sculpts, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
And last but certainly not least, we just really throw this in here for Prime, McFarlane Toys.
For Prime, does he have a love-hate relationship with them, or
I give him shit. He doesn't collect them that much, but between the two of us, he probably collects them more than I do.
Oh, okay. I like McFarlane. I don't own too many of them since I don't shoot in that scale very often, but as far as aesthetics, they're generally pretty good. You know, articulation may not be as extensive as some of the other brands, but I like him. And also, like, I'm, you know, big into hockey and stuff, and he does a lot of those hockey figures now, and he did back in the day too. So a little tidbit, he actually designed one of the Todd McFarlane designed one of the alternate logos for the Edmonton Oilers, my local team. So, he's got his own custom logo because he grew up in Alberta and he was a fan of the Oilers back in the day when Gretzky and Messi and all those guys were playing. So he's got a love for hockey. So I got love for him.
Nice. I had no idea. That's awesome. Well, see, it wasn't so bad, Dwayne. You made it.
Yeah, you did great. Really.
Well, you know, it's barely been awesome talking to you, Dwayne. Anything that you want to plug before we let you go?
No, just my socials, I guess. And I do have a post coming up probably tomorrow morning, something that I've just finished up. So if you're into Dragon Ball, keep an eye out.
Oh, I love Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So like I talked about earlier, guys, for anybody listening, you can go subscribe to Dwayne Shoots Toys on YouTube. You can follow him at Dwayne Shoots Toys on all the social media channels. Or if you just want to check out some of his photography, you can check out DwayneShootsToys.com. He's got a lot of high-res images of some of the shots that he's done. Really been a pleasure talking to you, Dwayne. Can't thank you enough for being our guest. Hopefully we can have you on again in the future. And we're going to put you in the lobby while we sign out here. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome. Great way to start 2024, right? Or at least start, let's say, part of 2024. I think that
that's
was
it. I think we're done. Part. Like,
yeah.
Our one guest, that's it. That's all. We can wrap it up. 2024, I'll see you guys 2025.
Yeah, we made it. All right, guys. Well, thank you for checking us out. Thanks for tuning in. If you guys aren't subscribed, make sure you subscribe and hit that notification bell so you don't miss when we go live or post a new episode. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Peace.